On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
Well, look, lots of questions. You know, we touched on this with Josh Hammer about the situation in Iran. And we're going to find out here from Jacob Olidor where he thinks this is heading. But I want to play a little bit of Marco Rubio because this is what the Secretary of State says.
I also think it's pretty growing apparent that even within their own system, there's a growing split. I think maybe some of your outlets have documented this. Between those that understand that their economy is in shambles and they need to do something, or they're going to be in a lot of trouble very soon, economically, domestically, and others who are very militant in their view of life and in their view of the world and continue to launch missiles. So they'll have to work out that split internally. We're going to continue to respond. If the door opens to diplomacy, if the guys that want to do something productive for Iran win and take control of that system or take control of the negotiations, that'll be a very positive development. That's not where we are tonight.
Okay, meantime, we have, you know, American troops that unfortunately have been killed.
Those great people, those great patriots were out there fighting that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. But we hit them very hard again tonight. And we did that in honor of the probably three as opposed to two great patriots.
So Jacob Olidor back with us, Chief Research Officer and Director of American Security at the American First Policy Institute. Jacob, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
Great to be with you. Doing well. How are you?
I'm good, but I'm confused. Like when the Secretary of State talks about doors opening to, you know, diplomacy, I thought that that door was open several weeks ago when they had the memo of understanding, which seemingly has not held together at all. So are we getting mixed messaging from the administration?
Well, not at all. No, this is all consistent, and it's great to be with you and your listeners. This is a big escalation by the Iranian regime over the last few weeks. But at the end of the day, what we're doing right now, what the United States is doing, is something transformational for a generation. I mean, this is ending really an architecture five decades in the making of creating terror against the United States and against innocents around the world. And so that's a process, and diplomacy is always the first option, but it never comes at the expense of obviously military pressure, economic pressure. And that's what we're seeing take place right now.
So, well, I think some people might be confused because, look, we're striking them pretty hard. And, you know, one of my reactions, I've heard this out there from other people too, is like, how much harder can we strike them? I mean, how can we still be in a situation where militarily we're still inflicting more and more pain when we've hit so many targets in the first place? I know it's a big country. Maybe that's part of it. What would your answer be on that, Jacob?
Well, there are a number of – it's a good question. And obviously there are still targets we can hit. Some of the critical infrastructure, for example, that has been discussed, which would be fair game given how – the regime uses it for its military means. But it's a higher question as well as what kind of pressure actually imposes pain and costs on the regime. Some of that, I think, as the Secretary of State alluded, is a little bit of a wait-and-see mode to see which of the wings within their echelons prevails and letting them kind of fight among themselves over it. Another piece of it is looking around the region at pressure points. And so I think as part of that, the Lebanon diplomacy has been very important. The arrival of the Prime Minister of Iraq in Washington last week was another important point. These, I think if we focus more intensely on each of these areas outside of Iran's borders, I think actually that could apply even more direct pressure on the regime. But of course, maintaining that military pressure directly as well and the naval blockade are part of that. So it's a multi-front effort.
But do you have any sense of who the different players are inside Iran that we might be dealing with? Are there factions that have become clear, or is that sort of still a mystery?
They generally are clear. I mean, and what it is look, you've had this competition for several years between the foreign ministry and the IRGC. But right now, it's effectively the IRGC that's in a dominant position there, which has been pretty skeptical of negotiations. They are, I think, increasingly calling the shots, literally and figuratively there. But then you also have the foreign ministry types that have always preferred that diplomatic approach. You know, all that being said, the intentions are the same, it's just the tactics. But I do think right now, you know, they're kind of in an unprecedented situation of leadership vacuum and having to sort it out from themselves, which, you know, it's not the worst thing to have our enemies in a state of chaos like that.
How do you react? I mean, Kuwait was hit, and they say one of its power and water, you know, desalinization plants were attacked for the second time in 2 days. And obviously, we're hitting some of the Iranian infrastructure right now. But one of the things that they said is that even though their power grid is stable, in Kuwait, about 90% of that water comes from the desalination. I think I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. Yeah. I think I got it right the second time. So thoughts on that? I mean, there has to be a response. You can't let that keep happening, right?
Absolutely. And look, in Kuwait in particular obviously knows this very well. I mean, having suffered the Iran-Iraq war and the invasion of Iraq several decades ago, I think that's all exactly right. And I think the longer this continues, the more aligned all of our regional and global allies will be in wanting to stand up for, you know, against the regime. You know, I think, you know, how Kuwait will respond is one thing to watch. I mean, it's noteworthy that the UK in the last 2 weeks finally came around to designating the IRGC as a terror organization. I mean, it's small fries in one sense, but it's, you know, I think it's a sign that there is a consensus forming, and I think that's part of what we're doing here. You know, we don't want to take full ownership, nor should we, over what happens in this vast, you know, country in the day after. But building that coalition to plan for that, I think that is part of the intent here, and that takes time.
You know, it's interesting. Jacob Olerdor is here. I feel like I learned a lot, and hopefully the audience learns a lot from conversations with you about this. But I still think there's a sense, and I talked about this a little bit in the previous segment with my friend Josh Hammer, that, you know, the president needs to go out there and make a stronger case for what we're doing. We thought we might get some of that on Thursday night. But Jacob, it seems like you and some other folks, and I have Jim Talent on here quite a bit, make a better case for this and explain it better than the president does. And that leaves, look, it's hard enough for me to understand geopolitics, but most people, what they see are gas prices, right?
No, it's a fair point. And look, there is real pain to American families at the pump, but I think there's a broader context here. And I think the president's been doing a fantastic job explaining it. I think you're right. There are several factors going on right now. But I do think, you know, one thing we can always go back to is his own instinct and record, really, on Iran, not just the many decades as a civilian, but also obviously in the first term and Soleimani, the actions he took. So I think that's consistent. The other piece is kind of how we think about the future. And here, you know, what I go back to is, look, this waterway has been under attack for many decades by Iran. So it's right to focus on the pain in the present, the gas pump, but that pain has been there all along in some form, given the risk by the regime. What's actually going to happen here, once the regime is no longer able to threaten this waterway, well, I mean, companies, insurers will be able to look at this and say, look, it's a different risk landscape than we're used to. There might actually be a higher degree of confidence and stability in this part of the world. I don't want to talk about the exact price of gas. I know there's a little bit, you know, it's a bit of an art there, but I'm very confident in terms of the stability that we're going to see because of this. And I think that alone is the context for patience and, you know, really letting us take the time we need to do the job to its conclusion.
Well, and I think
every week on the Moth podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears and I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time, or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Part of it is finishing the job. Now, if we would have gone back, I'll ask this as a final question. We'd go back a month to June 20th, and I don't even know if that was around the time that the Memorandum of the Understanding came out. But if I were to have asked you or anyone else, or just to kind of, you know, look into the crystal ball on July 20th, are we still going to be in this thing the way we are? Will we have finished the job? Well, the answer is no. So if we look ahead another month, because one of the concerns that I think a lot of people have, including me, is that this thing, you know, the timetable is getting way, way stretched out from what the expectations were. So how do you finish the job? That, I think that's really what people want to know.
Right. Well, it's a good question, and it sounds abstract. It's very concrete and specific. And what that means is, look, eliminating Iran's ability to threaten Americans through its military, infrastructure. So that's part one. And part two, I think, is ensuring we have that coalition in place. Now, that takes time. And I think the surprise for the United States is that our European allies that have always been hand in hand with us in every military engagement are completely sitting out this one. That puts more of a burden on us and other partners. But I think there's a lot to be hopeful for. You have Israel, you have the UAE, you have other countries stepping up against this threat, coming together. I think that's kind of the picture we have to look at as far as the future. And really, that is the America First model of burden sharing, making our partners take ownership for the security and prosperity of their own regions so that Americans don't need to worry about it.
Great conversation, Jacob, as always. Really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on this afternoon. All right, take care.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.